This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to part two, the after show of my conversation with Todd Smith from Hey Day Now. Todd, welcome to the after show lounge.
Listen, this is some cool stuff that you're doing here, man. I'm excited to be a part of it and appreciate it.
Thanks. So for everyone watching this, maybe you caught this, you didn't catch the other part, go check out part one on either podcasts everywhere they're sold or on the YouTube channel, on the Jason Cutter YouTube channel. Make sure to check out part one. Ton of great stuff. Some things I literally took some notes about that blew my mind. And again, you know, I've been around sales for about 20 years now, a little late bloomer, didn't start till I was 27. But, you know, leadership for most of that. And some of the stuff that you said, Todd, like we were just talking before I hit record and I almost forgot to record this second part. But starting off, like the part you said where not change a KPI for a day, but change a behavior forever, like literally the way you put that blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, to me, we talk about some of these things or these pillars that are foundational. And I think that that's the piece that we as leaders have to understand is that we've got to stop focusing on a KPI, stop focusing on a metric, stop focusing on just that like little raise that like what effect does it have? If I do this one, then this other one falls off. But if I change a behavior that becomes that intrinsic every single day I do the same thing, those are the results that we care about. That's what I want. Like, that's what I want for my team. That's what they should want. And when you make those two mesh and that becomes the behavioral change, you've got something special.
Well, and I was thinking about it in the gap as we were jumping over into this one, where, like, if I look at my own journey, let's say with health, when I decided to go with like a paleo type diet and cut out a lot of other stuff, in the beginning I was tracking everything, right, reporting on everything. I was KPIing the crap out of every meal, every day. I know some people do that with counting calories. And then you get into that habit, like you said in part one, where you go to the gym for a few weeks and you don't need a reminder. You don't need to track everything. And then now it's the behavior that's changed. Right. Like right now at this point in my life, I don't need to track calories. I don't need to track these things because I know what to do. And it's now just a habit and a behavior. And that's what you want for your organization. If you're just driving KPIs all the time, at some point you're going to lose. Right. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to have a bad cheat day and throw yourself off track.
Yeah. I love what you said in terms of a habit, because for as much as we want to motivate good habits, like we do the same thing with bad. Like, whether you're talking about food or you're talking about life, like I start rewarding somebody's habit that they're doing over here. And like, I mean, we've seen it. I reference the call center because there's so many things you see in a call center that are valid for everyday life. But in a call center, you have somebody like, oh, we got to measure average speed of answer. What starts happening? People start answering the phone and saying, hey, can you hold on a second? And they just put them on hold. That's a terrible experience, but I'm rewarding or recognizing like, oh, but they hit average speed of answer or average handle time. So many people were looking at that. And you're like, so now I'm on and I'm dealing with my flight and I'm trying to get a change, but it gets to that time and they're like, I'm sorry, you're cutting out, click. But they hit their average handle time. It looks like they're doing great. And like, we have to be careful of the habits that we create when we're adjusting. Like you adjust one thing or you tune this and it puts this other one out of tune. Whether it's a guitar, it's an instrument. And the right behaviors, and you start motivating those and those right habits and getting that dialed in, it's a powerful piece.
Well, what's interesting is recently recorded an episode with Mr. Ron L. Richards. One of the things he said, and this is where it came to expectations and surprises with other people in general, is he said that he just knows that people will do whatever is in their best interest, not mine. Not what I think, not what they say, but what they actually feel.
Yep.
And so the key is that humans and then salespeople or call center people especially will find a way to win at whatever the rules of the game are,
yep,
gray or not, right? Yep. Like I had an organization where talk time was important. Like a total talk time in a day was measured and monitored and expected. And then we caught reps who would literally call to leave a voicemail. When the voicemail says, all right, if you're happy with your message, please hang up or press pound, they would just let that loop for about 10 to 15 minutes on the call just to pad their talk time.
Right.
Right? Like if there's a way, people will do it, which is exactly what you're talking about, which is instead of putting in too many rules in the game or KPIs and expectations, is get the behaviors you want for them and for you, which of course is going to help
and
everybody.
Not too much of a plug, but one of the things that we actually had developed in our system was a way to combine KPIs so that that couldn't happen. So like in a sales organization, we're used to measuring like pipeline, or we measure revenue dollars closed, or we measure calls made. We said, why would you do those individually? Like, why don't you get really good and measure the number of calls made divided by the pipeline created divided by the revenue closed, and that be one KPI? Like, that's a powerful thing, because now I can't skimp on it. To make it in real simplistic terms, if I measure just average speed of answer like we talked about before, that's ways to gamify that. I measure just average handle time. But what if I did average speed of answer plus average handle time plus wrap-up time, and that was a goal? Or divided by NPS, or voice of the customer. Now, I can't miss out on any one of those, because the big one might, like, you just have to put these metrics together to get the behavior that you want. And now when I get people realizing like, hey, it's not just about one of these KPIs, but it's about the overall experience, and that's what your motivation is. I start working on that behavior. Now every customer I take care of, I do in a different way, because I'm not so worried about one metric. I'm worried about the end goal. And now leadership and the rep is aligned, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
And I think that combined KPI is the key, right? Like, a lot of people in sales don't want to do math, right? They were told there was no math involved. But that's really the key. Like, small plug on my side, too. Years ago, I developed something called the closing effectiveness score, which would load balance performance for a rep across multiple kinds of lead sources that have multiple costs per lead, normalized against the target cost per acquisition, which sounds really nerdy and stuff, but it's basically saying, if I'm taking five different types of leads, they're not all the same.
Yeah.
Right? A direct mail call is different from a Facebook lead. And so how you do across all of those is totally different, but should give you one score. And now with one number, I can compare the whole team based on the expectation, and I know if we're winning or not. And you can't game that,
right?
You're not gonna work that formula over, because it's looking at it. And it's true. Sales organizations are not one KPI driven. You can't look at one KPI because you will lose.
Right.
Not to make the after show all KPI and math related. I'm sorry for all the salespeople out there that might have already tuned out because we got all nerdy and talked about math. I'm sorry. all right. So one of the things I wanted to chat with you about was what you had told me prior to us getting on here about creating a world-class sales experience internally and obviously externally. And your focus, obviously, as a newer company that's wanting to put out a product and wanting to figure out use cases and how to make customers happy and give them what they want, and where is that balance with sales selling something that maybe doesn't exist because they want the sales,
yep,
and product development having to build it, and when it makes sense to do that, and then when it doesn't, like for companies out there, especially when sales usually drives most companies, and then everyone else has to basically clean up whatever sales committed to.
Yeah, that is a common theme. First of all, like, of course we can do it. Like, wait, you build cars, and now you're gonna build a bicycle? Yes, yes we are. And it goes right on the back of the car. It's fantastic. But I think that coming from this, where we built this from the ground up, good grief, there's so much learning. And I would recommend that everybody has to go through something like this, because it makes you so much and perceive so much different. I have such a deeper respect for the developers and the engineers on what they do. Because for me, when a customer asks for something, and in my mind, I can picture what they're asking, I'm like, oh, that makes total sense. Yeah, why don't we put that in? And I'm like, guys, yeah, well, this is what we need. I told them that we would have it and that it would be, I even have in the past said, like, yeah, we could probably have that by next quarter. Well, then I come back to my team and they're like, we haven't scoped it. We have these other sprints we're doing. We have this that we have to develop. And you're looking at it from, oh, that button just needs to exist here and bring up these files. Do you know how much work goes into that? There has to be the design. And then the design goes to this. And like, there's all these other steps. And I'm like, so can we do it next quarter? Like, that's my answer. Like, and when you actually get on their level, one of the things I will say is valuable is when you actually learn what those individuals and other people in your company do and how they do it and respect them in a way that you would want to be respected and come to them before you commit to stuff, that's that dynamic we were talking about in culture and in companies that work really well that you can notice. And JC, you alluded to this, like you notice right away what type of culture they have. And hopefully people, when they see us, that's something we've had to learn, because before that culture wasn't great because I was like, well, I need it. Like we've already sold it. And they're like, you also ask for these other four things. And that was something that was tough because a sales guy doesn't want to walk away from a deal. I think that's the hardest thing is to walk away. And one of the other biggest things I found in that is that when you do walk away, sometimes they still want it. In fact, a lot of times they wanted your product. They just were saying, well, if you could also do this, it closes another gap for us. And I just said yes, rather than diving into that or delving into that and making sure that I understood. Like, it's crazy.
Interesting, because I could totally see that happening in the sales experiences that I've had and the companies that I've seen, where the salesperson takes that as a deal breaker. If you don't have this feature, I will not buy from you. Which so many times that potential customer is not saying that. They're saying, can you do this? This would be amazing. Yeah. And then the salesperson hears that and say, okay, I must give them that or else I won't have a deal. And I want to reduce every barrier because I don't want to have to tell them no because I'm a salesperson. And so good lesson out there for anyone selling something, especially early development or where there is the ability to make modifications and changes, is don't take that as a objection or a line in the sand. It might just be a question, right?
Yeah. Well, two things that come to mind on that. One is, what problem does it solve? Like, there's this problem, cause, solution, benefit. Like, what is the problem that's going to solve for? And is that significant enough that we know the cause of it and we can put a solution in place and know the benefits? Like, if we can't map that out, like, it's probably not good. But the other part is, like, one of the things that I preach religiously to my people is, not asking the question doesn't change the answer. It simply means I don't know. So think about that. Like, we come into a sale and somebody asks for something and we just say, yes, we can do it, or no, we can't. But if I were to just ask how important that is, or is that a deal breaker? Like, just asking the question puts me in such a better position of power, knowing, yes, we're going to lose this deal if we don't do this. And that's a different conversation with engineering than, hey, is this something we can do and can we commit to it in the next year? Like, or are we going to not do it at all? Like, those are completely different conversations. And because we don't ask to know what it is, we just make assumptions, puts us in a really bad spot.
Totally makes sense. All right. Something else I wanted to ask you about. Obviously, you guys started out, you had the chance to start fresh with this new company, with Heyday Now. One of the questions I ask people is, if you had to start over, what would you do differently? You just had that opportunity because you're you know, building this from a foundation up. Yet, what's interesting is, when I asked you that before, you still had a response to it, right? Like, sometimes I ask people and they're in the early stages and they're just like, yeah, I'm doing it now, right? Like, I'm restarting now. What did you learn even after doing it, you know, that hope maybe a lesson for anyone else running organizations, founding things, that you still look at and go, oh, if I could redo it over again, I would do X.
Some of it is features. We had a very large customer early on that was, this is what I need. And we're going above and beyond to build those and have those features for them specifically, because we know if we get this customer on, it expedites everything else we're doing. That's our mindset. And we're building. We got down to it and had this stuff, and it was a lot of it designed for them. And we even brought on people to help do that. And it came to their COO, who said, well, before we do anything, I want to talk to other people who are doing it, who are utilizing your tool. And so we just built all these things that maybe would have been roadmap item, you know, phase two, phase three. And we put them into phase one because they're going to need it. And then we were at this crossroads of, well, now we can't even sell it because they're waiting on a like-minded customer to be first. And so that, just the learning on it is, you got to have a very detailed plan. And when you're building this out, I think that the other piece of this, because we thought that that was going to happen and we didn't solidify it, we didn't have a signed contract, we didn't have any of that. We just were sure that word of mouth, and we had a good relationship here, it was going to happen. So we even hired multiple salespeople. We weren't ready for multiple salespeople yet. The product wasn't ready for multiple salespeople to go into other verticals and such. And we got ahead of kind of, what do you say, over your skis a little bit on that one. And it that set us back. Like the repercussions of that were the setback was far greater than what we gained by doing it that early. So,
well, first off, I appreciate you sharing that and being honest. A lot of people wouldn't necessarily want to admit that happening. And I can totally see that happening, right? Field of dreams, yeah. Where, you know, just build it. This one's going to happen. The other ones are going to happen, you know, versus something different. Obviously, it all worked out because you're here now. You've got clients. You're building and growing and scaling. So, you know, long term, it worked out. I'm sure at that moment, though, I'm sure that was not
I would
fun.
Say that it's helped shape us going forward, though, because now we have the same situation we ran into where clients we're bringing on now have a recommendation or something that they want that the immediate reaction is like, yeah, we can do that. But now it's we go back to the drawing board. We map it out. How many other clients have we heard this from? What do we think? Hey, let's go to a few clients we have. If we added this, would you pay more for this? And it's doing the analytics and the work and the questions on the forefront to say, I can't risk going through that again. Like, I can't build this for one client. I can't.
And I feel like most companies will go through that experience at some point in their life cycle. You went through it early and survived, right? Despite, you know, no revenue, let's say. Other companies get to a certain point and then they start letting sales dictate the projects and the scope creep. And then they learn a very painful lesson from a financial standpoint. So I think all of them do. All right. So one last thing I want to chat about is you, Zoom, pandemic, and the kids. As much as we want to talk about. So you and I were talking about before we jumped on here, we're just talking about, you know, kind of my experiences running the podcast, us having Zoom meetings in general during the pandemic, you know, and where does working from home for you, kids coming in, going around, just kind of funny to think about. A lot of people get kind of stuffy about that. Some people just realize, hey, this is the new norm. You know, what is that for
you? I think that you use it some to your advantage. Even though I have my office and I'm set, we've adopted two. We have one of our own and 9, 5, and 3. So these kids, like when they want something or they haven't got an answer they want, like here comes the door open and I'll be in what I think is the biggest meeting that we've had as a company in the last year and a half. And here comes a kid walk, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Because of course they're going to be in their swimsuit or like she was doing gymnastics and she comes with this like cheek hanging out. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, they're going to think I'm the worst parent, this and that. And so I usually will try to spin it. And I come with something like, hey, I apologize. We couldn't order the other half of the suit because you guys haven't bought anything yet. Like, just try to spin it where it's on them. But man, is it an awkward thing. You see the door and like, especially if you're on video, you cannot click the video. And by the way, I can do 100 Zooms a day and you cannot find the video button when you need to, like in that moment where you just see the door starting to creep and you know something's about to happen you don't want anybody to see.
Oh my God, I love it. And I love how you spin it, just a natural sales guy. You just want to spin it and, you know, hey, you know, once we close this deal, I can get, you know, more swimsuits for the kids or more food for the kids. I will say two things. One is Stream Deck. It's pretty inaffordable. It is a USB device that most streamers use. You can set it up for Zoom with hotkeys and have it within arm's reach for muting, camera, recording, all kinds of stuff. I use that one all the time. So if that is something that happens to you, anybody watching, listening, make sure to check that out. Not a plug, not a
well, maybe it should be.
But that's a good way. Maybe it should be. That's a good way to access things if you don't know the shortcut keys. And I will say you are a fantastic guest to have on the show because prior to doing this, you basically sent the family and the dog away because, of course, anytime we do podcast stuff and the recording's on, you can't hide. That's when the kids need something. Someone comes to the door, going to sell you solar or insurance or whatever. It happens without fail. So I appreciate you mitigating that in advance and being like, all right, I need a very
in doing that. I was 100% convinced because it is without fail. Like this might be a first, like if the doorbell isn't ringing the next minute, but that like something had happened, like today would be the day that a pest guy comes, a solar guy comes, and someone is there just to sell you. I think we talked about earlier, sell you Jesus. Like I fully in picture, like sending everything out and then that still happening and being like, this is life. Like, this is what it is.
It is. And that's why I love doing this. That's why with the Authentic Persuasion Show, I don't edit things. It is life. Most people can now relate. I think it's fun. I think it's fun for people to know that they're not alone. Like, the experiences you had and how we even set up this podcast. Like, people are not alone. So I love it. I appreciate you being here and being awesome to set that up and then all this stuff you shared. For people, if you didn't catch part one, it will be in the show notes as well, but go to Heyday Now and check out Todd's platform that they built. And if you want to connect with him on social media like I did, LinkedIn is the place where we chatted the most. You can find Todd Smith, which, of course, there's probably a ton of them. He's Todd Smith 83, so he's probably the 83rd Todd Smith on there. Just kidding. But you can search Todd Smith Heyday Now on LinkedIn and find him as well. Todd, thanks for the part one gems, the part two, the after show, all of this stuff, what you're doing with companies, call centers, everything to help them with their employee engagement, their retention, the trickle down from all this. I appreciate you, and thanks for,
all right, thanks
for
being Jason. On the show. Thanks, everybody.
And for everyone watching, listening, make sure to check out part one, podcast or video, wherever you can find it. It's also on the Cutter Consulting Group site. Check that out. So many gems in there. And until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.